which they are, because to get into college, they don't check you which school you went, they check you what is your score.
That's right.
And in Brooklyn, it was very hard to make a good score, mm-hmm. which in FDR was much easier. So you didn't have to push as hard. So you went to Brooklyn Tech, so what are you, in engineering?
No, I'm a commercial artist, I know.
So you really go there for that? My girls graduated from the yeshivas, they went to colleges, Israel, my daughters.
Rachel, I wanted you to tell me a little bit about where you were born and what your family was like.
Okay. I was born in 1928, in July 2nd. My mother was the oldest out of seven children. The first three were girls in my grandfather's house. Then came a boy, Amasha Yaho. My grandfather was the rabbi and a sheikhet. Actually, his profession was a sheikhet.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that means?
Yes, a slaughterer.
Right. But this is a very dignified position in those days mm-hmm. for a religious person. I come from a religious background. Then the rabbi of our town died, which not in my knowledge, but I remember the rabbitzin being a widow. So my zayde was the rabbi, the rov. Not rabbi. Rabbi is a modern expression, but the rov of the town with the eid, with the white beard. And he was the rov of the town. Because people have to sell chometz, people have to ask shilas. Then the rabbitzin's daughters grew up, and one married a rov, and he became a rov. In the meantime, my zayde, being an older person, was ailing, and he died, my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my uncles, which is my mother's brothers, became a shofet as a young boy, and he married a girl, and he moved to a different town. We were a prominent family in our town. My grandmother, being she had the first children, girls, so my grandmother was a business lady to provide for the family. In World War I, they ran away from Russia. My grandmother, maybe my mother being as a young child or infant or something, I don't know exactly the year, mm-hmm. they ran away from Russia because of the pogroms or the persecutions of the Jews in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And they settled in a small town. Maybe they traveled through different towns, but since my grandmother and my grandfather are not here, so I don't know their history. But they settled in a town which in Yiddish it's called Krivitz.
Krivitz.
In Polish, it's pronounced Krzywice. And in Russian, Krivichi. The reason I say in the three languages, because this is the language that was spoken in my town. The Jews spoke Yiddish. And in order to communicate with the farmers, with the inhabitants of the others, with the Gentiles,
mm-hmm.
some were Poles, you speak Polish to them, and some were Russians or White Russians or Belarusian, you speak their native language. You know, the Jewish people are people of the book, and they are learned. And that's why we spoke their language, and they hardly could speak ours. We had neighbors going, we always had a maid. She had on Sundays the day off. And on Shabbos, being a religious family, she didn't do housework either. Maybe bring some water from the well or wash the dishes. And she also had a day off. We had neighbors. My grandmother, being a business lady, why was she a business lady? There was a house of seven children. And my zayde was a sheikhet. So how many chickens a week he would shecht during the week? Mm-hmm. Only for Shabbos. Or how many cows he would slaughter for the small population in our town? So my zayde was a learned man, a scholarly man. He would sit and learn and study the Gemara. As I remember stories from years back, that soldiers came to our town and my grandmother baked bread and sold bread to them. Now, what was her profit? They would give her, let's say, 10 pounds of flour, and she had to give them back 10 pounds of bread. So whatever, when you bake bread and put in water and yeast, you get more weight than what you put in.
Mm-hmm.
In meat, when you cook, it shrinks. You put in a pound and you take out less. But in bread or in cake, you put in a little bit and it grows a lot. So this was the arrangement with the officer for her labors. The extra pounds of bread was her profit for the labor that she baked for the soldiers, the bread. Maybe 100 pounds of bread she made.
This was your mother?
No, my grandmother.
Your grandmother.
When they just came and settled into the town.
Mm-hmm.
Then being this is World War I, and being there were soldiers stationed in our town, this was the profit that my grandmother made. So then she saw their soldiers, she provided, so she would bring them cigarettes or tobacco and sell. And that's how she got involved being into business.
Uh-huh.
That's how she got herself involved into business. She would go to Minsk or any other cities, and this was legal. And to sell maybe threads, maybe buttons, maybe this. And that's how she started mm-hmm. out into business. Salt was a big thing. Salt, sugar, And she would bring from the big city, from the horses, the little food to sell it to the local people. And that's how my grandmother got involved into business. As the children were growing up, they helped out. And every time, but my grandmother was also busy having babies, having more children. Mm-hmm. So the older children were running the business. The older children were running the business. And then, by 39, we had a big store, like a general store, because by then the children grew up and they were running the business.
This is your parents' generation.
Yes. Yeah. In order that you ask me what type of a family they come from.
Right.
So I'm just bringing it forward.
I got
that
it.
I come both. In those days, it was very prominent to be scholarly in Yiddish.
Uh-huh.
So my Zayde was a Rov for part-time when the Alter Rov died.
Mm-hmm.
And then my Zayde was a Shoichet. Because I'll come this later telling you that we were searched to kill us during the Holocaust because we were the Shoichet's family.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just telling you.
Okay, now tell me a little bit about your parents.
Okay. My parents. My father was killed, and it's been a long time. And I was an only child, and I lived with my mother, hiding out with my mother. And my mother.
What do you remember about your father?
Very little.
Very little.
Very little. Because you have to understand, it's 40 years back. My father was a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
My father was also learned in Talmud because he went to yeshiva.
And
because being my mother was the first daughter to get married, and she came from a prominent family for that era in that town. Because here we have lots of scholars in Philadelphia or in New York, but in a small shtetl, the people is the working class. And we were both business and scholars.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother, of course, married somebody equal into a fine prominent family from a different town, Talhinov.
Mm-hmm.
But when my mother married my father, I don't think he had his parents because I'm named after the grandmother. And I had cousins from my father's side who were older than I, but they were named after the grandfather. So I realized that when my mother married my father, he had no parents at the time.
So what was your life like before the war?
Before the war, as you see, of my age, I was a little girl going to school, to public school, to Polish public school. Had friends. Shabbos didn't go to school. After school, I learned a cheder in order to learn Hebrew, prayers and chumash, and whatever was appropriate for my age group.
Mm-hmm.
You start as a seven-year-old, you learn this just siddur, to read and to write. You get older, you learn chumash. You get a little bit older, you learn navi.
And tell me a little bit about Polish school. Did you have friends who were non-Jewish?
Yes. My friends were non-Jewish. Some were a little bit anti-Semitic, and some were not, as among children.
Mm-hmm.
Happens. Like on Shabbos or Yom Tov, I did not go to school. We'd come to the gentle girls and ask them for homework and bring them a slice of challah to taste from our challah, which my mother made homemade, home-baked, or a piece of cake, which my mother baked for Shabbos, for homemade, because Shabbos didn't go to school. For Pesach, we'd bring a few slices of matzah.
You remember how your family got along with the non-Jewish neighbors?
Nice. Yeah. I remember people would come. I remember vividly one lady. She used to have miscarriages a lot, and my mother would help her and tell her remedies, what to do when she was pregnant. She shouldn't have a miscarriage the next time. And then finally, after a few miscarriages, had a little girl, and the girl developed worms in her stomach. And my mother was telling her and teaching her how to take care of the child for the worms to come out.
Mm-hmm.
There's one worm which is called a very long one, 3 feet long, how to do it for the little girl, what medicines to give her, what food to give her, what to put in the potty, that the worm should want to come out, smell the good food, smell the boiling milk. Other women would come and tell the child his temperature. My mother would give them remedies, what to do, tell them from homemade remedies what to do. We got along well with the people. I remember my mother or my grandmother giving cigarettes to the farmers who would come in, or people, they would come with a hard luck story that they had a fire and their farm burned down, lend them money, they should be able to build up the farm, and then they would gradually pay off the money.
Mm-hmm.
We got along well. We tried to get along well.
Did your family belong to any Zionist organizations or any other Jewish?
I tell you the truth. As far as I remember, being I was a little girl, so I remember I went to public school, and after school I would come to the shul, and there was a rabbi, and he put up in a group me and two boys to learn siddur. But then every week on a Wednesday we would have a farm day, which all the farmers would bring in their goods to sell. The eggs and the chickens and the mushrooms in summertime and the berries in summertime. Wintertime, the dried mushrooms, their products, and wheat and potatoes and vegetables. And the Jewish people or the other people who didn't have vegetables, didn't have their own gardens, would buy from them their products of the eggs we would buy and the butter and the chickens, buy from them. They would have the money and they would come to the Jewish stores and buy goods, soap and needles and threads and fabrics and galoshes and shoes and stockings and whatever they need, and herring and pots and pails and sickles to cut the wheat. And to cut the hay. They had no tractors in those days. And I remember them always giving a cigarette, offering them or a candy, because they came from a long term, maybe walking by foot. So we helped each other.
Do you have any recollection of Jewish organizations?
Oh, yes. So every Wednesday, after the day was over, the fair was over, there were come out people to storekeepers to collect money to build a building to make a Jewish school for the children. The building was done, but somehow we never got organized, only maybe a year or two before the war, before 39, but we did not organize to have a formal school, maybe our lack of funds. But we learned in that school, after the public school, we'd come home and have whatever, a snack, and go back to that school and have a rabbi, and he made us groups. While teaching me Siddur, he would give others to write. While reviewing their writing, they would give us to write. Because one teacher had a few groups, then he would orally test us if we know. And so we learned in that school. But I remember coming, like there were organizational stuff, but I can't remember what organization. Being I was a little girl, they put up a space for us to see, but I remember speeches. I remember there was a portrait of Dr. Herzl, and maybe it was his yacht side, and maybe, I didn't remember what organization it was, but there was some kind of a celebration.
You don't have any recollection of your family participating in the organization?
Well, my grandmother, I'll tell you, my grandmother was an older person. You understand? So I don't think my grandmother went. And my mother, I don't know, maybe she was busy after all day's work. Maybe when they had this evening, maybe my family all went to this. But as a child, I was anxious to go much earlier to get myself a space. Maybe they came in later. There was organizational life in our town. There was organizational life. But being, let's see, if I was 7 or 8, take a child of nine.
Okay, you were 11.
When the war broke out, then there's no organization. But till then, let's say in 35 or in 36, I remember being some kind of meetings, but I can't remember from what organization or how it was. I remember being meetings, I remember going to them. And let's say the meetings called for 6 o'clock, we were also sitting there from 4 o'clock waiting. Maybe later on my mother or my aunts or uncles came in too, but for children, we should be quiet. We were happy that they let us sit there.
Did you have any idea of the Nazis in the time before they invaded?
Yes.
What sort of things?
We had in our family, we had a radio. So we heard news. Of course, newspapers came in also. We always had a newspaper in the day, but the radio I could hear. It was in Polish, so I could hear. And we heard about Nazis being in Germany, about Hitler being, hearing that German people running away to Poland or to France. But this was in 38, let's say. We heard on the radio that that Germany invaded Czechoslovakia and Germany invaded other countries. In 39, let's say in March, it was very strong news. March, that's before Pesach, and very strong news that on the border, Polish soldiers, the Polish-German border, Polish soldiers were shot, or something was bad news. I don't know exactly what was bad news. I remember as one instance that our radio, the battery went out. It wasn't an electricity like it's had here. It's a battery, and this expired the battery. So my grandmother went across the street to the druggist. They had the radio to hear news then, because my grandmother was very worried about the war, because she had 3 young men in the house. She had 2 sons and a son-in-law. And the 3rd son, who was a sheikh, had already married a different town, so she didn't worry about him.
The son-in-law was your father?
No, the son-in-law was my aunt's husband.
Your father wasn't in the...
It was a businessman. A businessman, my father. But this was
I don't understand. What does that mean? That means that he didn't live with you?
He lived with us, but not in this house. He lived in a different house. But my grandmother was worried because she had 2 young sons. One just finished the army. Just finished the 2 years time of the army. Everybody had to go at the age of 20 or 21 had to go to serve 2 years in the army to learn training. I hear people enlist who wants to go, but there was forced. You had to come to the army if you're eligible, unless you're sick or crippled or something. So she had 2 young sons and a young son-in-law, very tall, 6 foot, that she felt in case there's a war, they will be drafted. Let's say maybe my father was older a little bit, so maybe she wasn't worried about him as much. There's also ages involved. So she went to the druggist to hear the news, and my grandmother got a cold, and from that she got pneumonia, and she died in a very short, in 1 week. 10 days, my grandmother died. And this was a very big shock to the family, because she died Erev Pesach, and because she went across the street, and there was snow, and it was warm in the house, and it was cold outside, and she maybe had a sweater on top. We had very cold winters there, in the northern part of where I come from. And she got pneumonia, and this was before Pesach. So I remember here, the reason went there is because of news of something about Hitler. And in 39, September 1st, the war broke out.
Okay, so what happened then? What happened to you immediately? How'd you know about it?
We had a minion in the house saying Kaddish for my grandmother. So we were a close family, and I came in, and the radio was on, and I heard the news that something was bombed. And being I understood that cities were bombed, and there's a war. I was telling everybody there's a war, and they couldn't believe me. I said, well, how do you know? What are you talking about? I said, I just heard on the radio. I just heard on the radio.
Okay.
The radio was on, and people were busy eating breakfast. The radio's in the living room, eating breakfast in the kitchen or the dining room, and you know. And so I maybe came in to get something, and I just heard, there's a war, there's a war.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I didn't hear exactly what else they said, because it's 40-some years back to remember
word
by word.
Then what happened?
There's a war. We were frightened. Mm-hmm. We were frightened. I remember. Then there was they're not supposed to the windows supposed to be covered with blankets. There's not supposed to be lights in the house. There was a curfew. Not to go out in the street, but beyond certain hours. We were very concerned. We heard about the bombings in the big cities. There was a blitzkrieg. 6 o'clock in the morning, they were bombing. And the delegate, the German delegate, came to tell the Polish government, 8 o'clock in the morning, when the offices open up, that there's a war. We declare you war. We were upset, especially hearing that this is Germany, that we knew what Hitler was like. Maybe by then they didn't have the concentration camps yet. We knew it was bad. We didn't know how bad, but it was bad.
And then, do you remember your parents talking about this?
Everybody was talking. Everybody was talking. Everybody talked. Even you go on the street, you eavesdrop, hearing people talk. Everybody talked.
But you don't remember your parents specifically discussing it at home, or?
Everybody talks. That's all.
Okay.
Who talked what from 45 years back, and I was 11 years old. How can I pinpoint exactly who talked what?
Gee, I don't know. Okay.
Look.
So what happened?
In
next?
Order to judge me. Put yourself, and you were 11 years old, in specific occasions talked about, maybe it was a week before the war, maybe it was already during the war, that we were afraid there was going to be a shortage of food.
Mm-hmm.
We had a store, so we had groceries. So I remember my mom is sending me to the next town, to a wholesale. I should buy salt and soap and whatever I can buy. She gave me money, and I went with a horse and wagon, with a man that my mother rented him. He'll be schlepping, but I should be the one to handle the money, to buy as much as I can. So I remember in the hostel, my mother put me down on at least 5 pieces of long bars of soap. And then you cut them into pieces. I remember everybody was hopping, everybody was grabbing a lot. I bought more soap, even more than my mother told me. If my mother put me down 5 sacks of salt, I bought more salt. Because those things are very necessary for surviving, because this is not something that's produced on the farm, like salt.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a war, we wouldn't have any. And maybe for a pound of salt, we could get a few pounds of bread from a farmer.
Yeah.
He'll be needing salt, and we'll be needing bread.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be needing wheat or meat or something.
Okay, so the Blitzkrieg was on.
The Blitzkrieg was on.
And it was coming closer to you.
But
what do you
remember about that? We were far away. You see, we were near the Russian border.
Uh-huh.
And this was Poland. The Blitzkrieg was on near the German border. Of course, the Luftwaffe was very good, but still not as advanced as today. So they bombed. The Polish soldiers fought very good, but they didn't have the war to fight. They were very patriotic, the Polish soldiers. And of course, the Jewish soldiers who were in the army also, they were very patriotic, but not bare hands. Because of the Blitzkrieg, all the supplies were cut off. And one morning, we used to put on, being the radio stations in the big cities were bombed, we could not hear the news. So we used to put on the Minsk radio, the Russian station, which by air we were only 20-some kilometers. So the waves would pick up the news from the Russians, and we would hear from their news. Also, we were very happy when France and England declared the war to Germany. We hoped being they coming out to help, maybe somehow the Germans would not reach us. So we tried to listen to news. But then in September 17, the Russians came to us. It was early in the morning. We put on the radio, and I heard that the Russians crossed the border. And what was their speech? They want to take their brethren, white Russians and Ukrainians, under their wings to survive. Mm-hmm.
Under their wings.
Under their protection. Under their protection.
Yeah.
Their brethren, mm-hmm. and they crossed the borders. So we didn't know what. In a way, we were happy.
We were happy
because it coming the Russians, but not coming the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, we were happy. It was the day after Rosh Hashanah. And this was Tsumdali, it was a fasting day. And as was customary on that day, also on Tisha B'Av, to go to the cemetery. I don't know the reasons why. But for small children, it was a big deal to go to the cemetery, see the monuments of the grandparents. And everybody was going. And everybody was shushking, telling each other, did you hear the news? Did you hear the news? That the Russians across the border. We were afraid. Then the Polish were running away. We were afraid there was a bridge in our town. Afraid they might burn the bridge, which I think they did. I can't remember if they burned the bridge or they didn't burn the bridge. Because then wouldn't be no communication from the other side of the town if they burned the bridge or they bombed the bridge or something. And the Russians came and they made local militia because for anarchy, from hoodlums, from looting, from loitering, from anything. So local people made guards with sticks to walk in the streets to watch. And these Jewish boys joined also and the Gentiles to protect the town till a government will be settled.
Mm-hmm.
Till the Polish ran away and the Russians didn't arrive yet. So needed from local protection.
Uh-huh.
And then shortly after, the school went back to normal. School was established. I went back to school, trying to teach us the Russian alphabet, the white Russian alphabet. Of course, the lesson started being in Russian, in white Russian, Russian songs.
So was your life much different with the Russians there?
Yes. Life was much different. First of all, then they started arresting people and sending them to Siberia. And in this, they took first people, with prestigious people, like who was a Polish officer, they took them. Who was a judge or a lawyer, they arrested them. And of course, some of the rich people took people from our town who were rich. I don't know what they accused them of, capitalists or whatever. And we were also afraid they might take our family too.
Uh-huh.
We were afraid they might take us also. So we tried to disperse. That everybody tried to leave the town and move to a different town when nobody knew us, and then get a menial job and to work.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody would know that you're a capitalist or bourgeois. They would call it bourgeois, which means rich people.
Uh-huh.
So we were also scared of them, that they might do that. So
you moved out of your town while the Russians were there.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So we were afraid. Life was much different. First of all, we were religious people from our background, and this was deprived.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember crying to my mother that I have to go Shabbos to school. And my mother said, we are in goals. What can you do? You better go to school. Go try not to write. So I went to school not to write, went in my Shabbos dress. But then I had to write. So again, I was upset. My mother said, we are in goals. You have to do the city. Otherwise, they might send us to Siberia or take us to jail. What can you do?
So, now, did your whole family, or so, where did you go? What was the town you went to? Do you remember?
Went where?
When you left your hometown. Because
we were in Krivitz till the Germans came. And then we left the town.
Oh, you were in Krivitz until the Germans came?
Yeah, until the Germans came. Which is shortly after, a year and a half after.
Yeah.
They came in September, 39. And in 41, June, July, the Germans came. In 41. So what the school year was 39, 40. Mm-hmm. And 40, 41. The school year was over and the Germans came. And the Germans came. So people, the Scots and the local hoodlums, the teenagers, were throwing rocks at Jews. They threw at one old man a rock and he fell, hurt his head, and he died a few days later. They took a few people and they were accused of being communists, and they shot them. So of course, the mood that leaves the people. Some hoodlums, local, who throw rocks in the windows at night. So we all had locked in one room, and would sit, go to sleep under the beds. Because if we lived not in big apartment houses like here, one floor houses.
Mm-hmm.
So if a rock falls in and the glass, it falls on you and you could get hurt with the rock and the glass. So you'd go to sleep under the beds. So the rock and the glass will fall on the bed. especially on Sundays, they would get drunk with a homemade samogonka. This is homemade liquor that they would made on their own, the moonshine. Get drunk on that, and then go and it was a mitzvah. To her, the Jews, it was a mitzvah to them. So, you know, like teenagers, some are rebellious, and they and he didn't have an opportunity. But I must tell you, that one time a woman was passing by a house, and she saw that a gentlewoman was hitting her son with a strap. Mm-hmm. And she was hitting him because he was among the Shkotim the night before, throwing rocks at Jewish families. She felt embarrassed that her son was in this group. The Jewish woman passed by a gentle house, and the mother was hitting a son with a strap.
Yes, I heard you.
I want to emphasize.
Okay.
And the mother was hitting the son with a strap or with a piece of wood or something, feeling embarrassed that her son, as a teenager, maybe 16 or 17, was among the hoodlums throwing rocks. She does not want to be embarrassed for her neighbors and for the Jews that her son was among the hoodlums throwing rocks at the Jewish families.
Now, was there much anti-Semitism before? Did this all just seem to come up?
Before the war, anti-Semitism was such, not so much to hit, in my small town, not so much to hit the Jews as to support the gentle, meet them sprang up gentle stores with groceries or other stores to support the local businesses. Uh-huh. Not to buy from the Jewish people, but to buy from the, to support the gentle stores, to support mm-hmm. the gentle. Usually the Jewish people were in the businesses, small grocery, selling nafta for the kerosene lamp, selling sugar, selling flour, selling herring. Herring was a big deal because it was a poor section where we lived. Northern part, mostly farming, no industry. There were very few Jewish tailors in town, a few Jewish shoemakers. So they had gentle apprentices, taught them the trade. We had a store, we had a few sales clerks, now we're still working. Later on, before the war, we even took in bicycles to sell. And parts, uh-huh. we had a gentleman who would put the bicycles together. First, we brought in one summer regular bicycles. Then we put in parts to put them together, bigger profit, sell parts also. We had a man who would assemble them for us. Uh-huh. We had Polish friends.
So what happened?
In 41, when the Germans came, and they were going to the front, and the army would come into the town, the battalion or army, I don't know, or a division or whatever, or a small group, we were afraid that they might hurt us. So my mother tried to put us children to sleep over the night with Goyish families, with gentle mm-hmm. families. Mm-hmm. My mother would go early and ask them if we could bring over the children to sleep over. They felt, in case there is a pogrom or something, as adults, they could run faster, and us as children would be caught, we wouldn't be able to keep up, and will hinder them. So many times we slept over in gentle families. Me and my cousins mm-hmm. slept over in gentle houses, and they would give us bread and milk. We are allowed to eat like bread and butter and milk, and we would stay over the night. The next morning, everything quiet. My mother would come and get us. Some in town, or usually in the outskirts, further from the town, not in the center, because center was.
Was where it would happen.
Yeah, it wasn't safe.
Let me ask you what happened when the Germans came.
When the Germans came, it was terrible. Whether the Germans gave the law or the local militia, I don't know. But we were not allowed to walk on sidewalks, we had to walk in the middle of the street. And in our town, there weren't too many Germans, maybe one or two people who ruled the town. The only thing is the soldiers going through the front, they would come to the houses and rob, look for jewelry, look for clothing, and take and send home to their families. Also, I remember as we saw them approaching on my street from far, I would put on a long dress, my mother's, a dirty, especially if it's a dirty dress, mm-hmm. to be long, and I'm home. In case they see me unattractive, they should not hurt me,
uh-huh.
because by then I was already 12. In 39 I was 11, but by 42 I was already about 13. 42 I was already 14.
So you knew about that possibility when you were, by the time you were 13.
Yes. Didn't know exactly what, but we were afraid they shouldn't hurt.
Uh-huh.
So as we saw them from far coming, they would come two, three, and look for food, to take out food or jewelry or clothing, anything. But then we were robbed from the local people, from the local militia. They came to the houses, took out the nice furniture from us, took us this, whatever they wanted. We didn't see it. They could hit us with the side of the rifles. Because mm-hmm. we tried to comply, only because at one time they took away each Jewish family had a cow. So they sustained us with milk and milk products. Each family had a cow. Mm-hmm. They took away all the Jewish families, the cows. Okay, so we didn't have any more milk. Of course, this was a tragedy because this is the food, small children at home. And it was a big family because by then, one sister came running from a different town with two children and a husband. Another sister came running with one child. And we all lived together in the same house. And my uncle had to, they picked him and some other people to take the cows to the big city. And there they would be put on transport, probably to Germany. And the cows ran away. And they beat up my uncle very hard. In black and blue stripes they made him, because the cows ran away. He wasn't a cow man or a cowboy, he was a shoychet. Mm-hmm. He was a shiva bocha. And they punished him for it. Some of the cows ran away, they didn't know how to herd them back. They ran, yeah, the cows which ran away, the other cows ran away. This was a big thing. And then I remember that, and this was a local, he was a policeman, but he became a commandant or something in the police. And he was a very terrible person. His name was Leschinsky.
Leschinsky.
Leschinsky was his name. And he was from the... a bad person as a person, and he was being of his background he was. And now his wife would come to church in beautiful Jewish coats and suits and dresses and furs and foxes that took away the wrap from us, from my aunt, from us. It took away a whole cellar of clothing, fine clothing from us. She'd come to church, she became the lady of the town, the first lady of the town. And being he wore always dark glasses, so we couldn't see him, but he could see us. So he called him, being he had four eyes, two eyes and two of the glasses, we called him, he had a nickname, Fir Egelbeker. Mm-hmm. So if we saw him coming, we didn't say Leschinsky is coming, he shouldn't hear his name mentioned. We would say the Fir Egelbeker is coming. So everybody in town knew who was the Fir Egelbeker. Fir means four eyes, two of the glasses and two of his own eyes. The Fir Egelbeker is coming. And then through the Judenrat, through the committee that we had in our town, established like established a government. Mm-hmm. Because they had to go to labor, to do work. They should, one person could go a lot and one person could go a little. So the police would come and tell them, we need 5 people here or 10 people there. And they would already pick according to the list who went to work and who's next is next to go to work. So through them we arranged to make some kind of peace that he shouldn't pick on us, on our family, Leschinsky, Dafir Egeldegan. So he wanted a gold watch, a pocket watch, and we didn't have. So we tried to search in town from the rich families who had a gold watch. And then we paid with gold to buy from this lady the gold watch, because her, but then she was poor herself and she was rich before the war. Mm-hmm. Her husband was in Siberia, sent through the communists, through the Russians. He was sent to Siberia. But she had this gold watch. So we bought the watch from her for gold, 20 ruble gold, and invited this Leschinsky to our house and put on schnapps to make peace, and the president in the watch that he should be nice to us.
Mm-hmm.
We bribed him. But I want to tell you a little interesting story.
Please.
Yes. Being Leschinsky was the commandant of the town, and he was always coming with a whip, always hitting people. Across the street from us was a very nice house. Actually, it was my aunt's sister-in-law and mother-in-law lived in that house.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I come from work, from someplace else, whatever work I did that day, I don't know. And they tell me that a commandant from a different town, from a bigger city, moved in here to that house. And my mom had tried to get me, I should work there. Number one, I could hear news and tell the others what's going on. Number two, in case there's an execution, maybe I could hide myself in that house, in the commandant's house, mm-hmm. so I could survive. By then, it was shortly before Pesach, which was March that year.
And had there been executions already?
Yes. They would take like groups of people, 4 people, 5 people, tell them to dig their own grave, and then shut them and execute them from prominent family usually. Bless you. But what I want to tell you that this commandant moved in, and my mother's main aim was that I should work there so I could hide under a bed, in a closet, in a barn, in a cellar, and I could survive. Because we heard on Purim night was a big execution in a town called Vileika, which is about 38 kilometers from us.
Mm-hmm.
And people were executed there. Till then we didn't hear, we just heard of groups, a few people here, a few people there, the Sheikh and the Rov, 10 Beste Balabatim, 20 prominent Balabatim, but not as a whole town.
Okay.
This is the first time I heard as a whole town. This was Vileika, this is a big city. But then already they had taken out some people, which we didn't know where to.
Mm-hmm.
My cousins were taken out, who lived in the town. 2 young boys, they were taken out. My aunt's husband, my uncle went there. And this was my grandmother's sister. And she was the last one to be perished. After the Megillah, the people went to sleep. And in the middle of the night, they woke them up and took them in the back of the town. And they shot them. My grandmother's sister's name was Taibe. And nobody survived from her family. Her husband was killed, her 2 sons, and herself. So when I had a little girl, I named her Taibe, after, because there's nobody in the family who could name her. And I named my daughter Taibe, which we call her Taibele. This was my grandmother's sister. She's all wiped out. Herself, her husband, her 2 sons.
When did you go into hiding, Richard?
This is what I want to tell you, where our hiding started. So we knew about Vileika, that there was an execution. Now this commandant moved in. So my mommy wanted me to work in this place so I could hide myself there. And when the commandant unpacked, I came in to help him unpack his belongings. He came in with 12 wagons, and there were lots of silver with Jewish inscriptions, which were given as gifts, as wedding gifts. Some kind of object, let's say a sugar dish or red box or whatever. Can't remember all the, but I remember the Hebrew or the Jewish letterings as wedding gifts to the families or gifts given, because he came in from a big city and there were maybe people more financially to do better. And the wife was expecting a baby. And I was a young girl and I spoke a nice Russian, very good white Russian, good Polish. Somehow they liked me. So I helped the wife, the commandant's wife, had a young sister about 16.
Mm-hmm.
So being the commandant's wife had a baby, so the 16-year-old was in the kitchen preparing meals, so I helped her in the kitchen to do meals.
Mm-hmm.
On a Sunday, they sent me to call the midwife, to tell the midwife that the commandant's wife is whatever. I had to tell her that she should, that the midwife should come. I thought someone should come.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, Monday morning, I came, and the commandant's wife had a baby girl. And by then, were Jewish girls, older in age than I was, doing laundry, washing the sheets, which were in blood or whatever, dirty mm-hmm. from the delivery. But I still worked in the kitchen helping them. The commandant spoke a verbal Russian. And somehow, whenever he spoke about the Jews, he did not use the word Jid, which was, he used the word Yevrei.
But this was a Russian commandant.
Well, he was a local. Russian, you see, uh-huh. we had nationalities like we have in New York, Puerto Ricans and Irish and Italians.
Mm-hmm.
So our town was Polish people and white Russians and Russians. Because originally from the First War, this part of Poland
right.
belonged to
I've
Russia.
And
in the 1800s or 1920, mm-hmm. or 1918 or 1920, whenever the wars were over, the First World War, and Polish borders were established, we became Poland.
Uh-huh.
We became Poland. But before that, in the First War, this was Russia, I suppose. So for us to speak Russian in our town was common,
uh-huh.
accepted. Russian, white Russian, and Polish. So this commandant, he spoke a very good Russian. And being I went to school, I always spoke Russian. I was a good student. I had good marks, excellent marks. And this was Monday, the girls were doing laundry, and this, then I think it was Tuesday, and the commandant came to eat lunch, and he brought along with him Leszczynski, who's also in the police, a big shot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what was his title. First, he was commandant, and then this commandant who came in had a different post, even higher, and then there was one, a deputy commandant, his name was Simashkevich. Simashkevich and Leszczynski were local people.
Mm-hmm.
Simashkevich was from a farm a few, maybe 2 miles from Krivitz.
Mm-hmm.
And Leszczynski was in Krivitz, and the commandant came from a different town. So the three of them came, they had dinner, and they drank. They drank schnapps, vodka. And the commandant came into the kitchen for some reason, and I went out from the kitchen to the pantry to bring in some kind of food or something, and he followed me. A little bit I was scared that he followed me. But all of a sudden, he said to me in Russian, if I may repeat in Russian, and then I could translate to you.
Very good.
He said to me, «Мы выезжаем на короткий бой». It means, we are going on a short or on a small war. On a war. I knew from the politics that the war, the front is very far. He's not going to war to fight the Russians. A war, it means to round up the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him, «Куда?» which means where. He told me короткий бой, means a short war. And I asked him where, being frightened, I asked him where. He told me Dolginovo, it means in Dolginov, a town which is 15 kilometers from Krivitz. The highway was good because the Jews cleaned the snow every day. And they were a motorized army with trucks and cars and buses or whatever else they had. We knew in 15, 20 minutes they're here. And he continued telling me. So I asked him what happened, or I maybe didn't have the nerve to ask him what happened. It's like Mr. Med yesterday in the speech said, he could speak to the president here, but he could not speak 40 years like this to the president in Poland. I don't remember how I asked him, but what he explained to me in Russian, the SSS, Vyska, means army, the SS, came to Dolginov, все евреи стали разбегаться, and all the Jews started running away. So they called us to come to help. So I knew what help it was to round them up. I tried to keep some kind of a face. I didn't know what to say. I'm Jewish. My mother always asked me or hinted me that I should try, maybe I could mention something to hide by them, but I was too scared to ask because this was very risky.
Mm-hmm.
If he knows I'm hiding there, he then could take me out himself, like Mengele took out the gypsy boy, pushed him himself into the ashes. When I would go to fetch water in the well, somebody was always in the window in my house watching for me and come and help me, and if I could tell them any news. being I was in the commandant's house, maybe I'd eavesdropped something. I quickly got rid of the pail of water I had, a little water here, a little water there, into food, into this, into that, and I cut the pail and going down, I'm going to get water. I said, fine. They looked in the window, I ring them. My mother went to help me fetch the water. And I tell him, in case it's Taurus, this is nicht gut, which means it's bad, it's not good. That I told her word by word what happened. My conversation with the commandant, that he's going to Dalhinov, for the execution in Dalhinov, where the relatives there, my father's family, brothers, cousins. And besides, it was a big city, much bigger than Krivit. There were about 3,000 people in Dalhinov. So we knew there was an execution. We didn't know how. We didn't know what to do ourselves. We got panicking. I told my mother. Later on, I went back with the water. Later on, I went again for water to see what's happening. And my mother again came out to tell me that, as I mentioned earlier, I don't remember if I did mention, in our town we have three faiths. The Jewish faith, the Polish belong to Roman Catholic, and the White Russians and Russians belong to Greek Orthodox. The Roman Catholic is a priest, but he's unmarried. So he was an older person, he had a housekeeper. But the Greek Orthodox is married, and he has children. And they were friends of ours, especially his daughters. He had a couple daughters. He's called the Pope. He usually wears long hair, a beard, wears long robes, and the big white sleeves. One of his daughters was married to a person, his name was Dubovik. Dubovik went to university in Lvov. And he was something like mayor of the town or something, he has a prominent position. So one of the daughters from the Pope, I don't know, either to Dubovik's wife, either his sister-in-law, the wife's sister, came running to tell us that in Dalhinov is bad. And we all knew if in Dalhinov is bad, it's very shortly going to be bad in Krivitz because of the highway, the distance, the highway is good, they're motorized, and it's the nearest town, that we should be prepared. So she came to run to tell us, I want to tell you, she came to tell us, to warn us that Dalhinov is bad, that we should do something about it. It's going to be bad in Krivitz also. So my uncle and a little boy went away earlier, like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, went away to leave town. One aunt and her two children were on the farm. The only people who were left in town for my family was my mother's younger sister, and me. Everybody sort of left town earlier, a couple days earlier.
Where was your father now?
By then my father was killed.
How did that happen?
They shot him. And we were going to leave town, but we waited. I couldn't leave my job. I would disappear, they'd be looking for me. But when I finished my work, let's say, whatever time it was, in the afternoon, finished my work, I asked them, can I go? And she said, yes, there's nothing else, washed the dishes, did my housework. It's about 2 p.m, I could go. I came home. We put on a few dresses on top of each other and a few undershirts. Because we always, if we run away, we may never come back to our hometown. So we should be prepared. My mother sold some money into my clothing, that in case we split up, in case it's being shot after us, in case we run in different directions, that we should be prepared. So as we were leaving town, in the back of our house we had a big garden, land, plot, that we would farm things, potatoes, carrots, beets, cucumbers, vegetables, a vegetable garden, a long one. And as we started leaving our house, going through the garden, not to go over the streets, but go through the field, end of town, and from there we'll be running away. All of a sudden I heard saying, halt, halt, you the halt, which means stop, stop, Jew, stop. We thought the Germans are chasing us already. We turned around, and there were a few little boys, maybe 12, 13-year-old boys, neighbor's children. They knew the word Jude, which means Jew, and they knew the word halt, which means stop. They just had fun. Maybe they didn't mean anything. They just had fun. But since they saw us, we were afraid to take the chance of running because they could go with the street to the police quarters and tell them they're on bicycles. By the time we reach the end of town on bicycles, they'll be ahead of us and waiting for us there. So we can't run away. We can't go. So what do we do? So we decided across the street from us was a drugstore, a druggist. The original people who had a drugstore, when the Russians came, her name was Shemenchik. She was a widow. And she and her children were taken to Siberia.
there were teenage children in the Siberia. So, but the Russians, they put in somebody else to be a druggist. Because in those days, you didn't have so many educated people, pharmacists, who could do prescriptions. You needed somebody knowledgeable. You just can't put anybody to mix up medicines. You needed the formulas. When the Germans came, the person who was running the drugstore, they went to his hometown. But there was a Jewish man from a different town. He ran away from Ilya. His name, the town was Ilya, and his name was Klock. He came running from Ilya with a wife and three children to our town because being afraid of the executions there. And being he was a pharmacist, he ran the drugstore. Everybody needed him because for this, not only the Jews, but the going and the Gentiles needed him because this was the only drugstore for the our town plus all the surrounding villages around if anybody got sick. So we decided we'll sit in his house. We'll sit through the night in his house. They're not going to come to take him to shop because if they shoot him, who's going to make medicines for them? So we sat through the night, and in the morning, we left town. Also, we had our town curfew. We had curfew, so beyond 8 o'clock, nobody should be seen in the streets, I think till 7 in the morning or whatever time. So we sat through the night there. And in the morning, we left his house to go to a village. Somehow the night went too quiet. The Germans did not arrive yet to our town. But we didn't know what was going on in Dalhina because nobody came us to tell what's going on. It's nighttime. Those who ran away didn't reach our town yet. And we left in the morning the town. We wore our yellow star because in case somebody says through the streets. But as soon as we left town, we took off the stars. So if we meet people in the street, on the road, they'll think we're Gentiles. They would know who we are. We left town and we went fast to find where my uncle was and my cousin. My uncle's name is Moshe Drazin. He's now in Providence. He's an older age person now. He was a rabbi in Providence, also was a sheikh in the younger years. Now they're older people, close to the 80s. Their son Shapsi is married. He lives in California.
So you were going along the road?
Along the road, and we found the place where he was hiding. And the farmer didn't want to keep them there. It was very cold. So the only place let us stay was in the sauna, which was far from the house, and there was very cold. And if we make wood to warm up, a smoke would come out of the chimney. And the farmers usually would make saunas. It's like a bed house. Each farmer had it. Mm-hmm. It was only a couple boards and some wood and water. And they usually did it on Saturdays. And this was the middle of the week, so this was not appropriate to have a bath. Mm-hmm. It was very cold. So he went as the family, we could take us to the house, and said, no, he's too scared. He's too scared. He suggested we should go to a different farmer. Mm-hmm. And told us directions how to go. So my mother and my aunt went to the different farmer and to ask them if we could come. And she said, yes, we could come. So my mother and my aunt came back to call us, and we went. I must tell you, it was a very cold day, and we were going through the fields, through snow, not with the road. We were afraid in case somebody will see us. And on the snow, we didn't have footsteps. On the snow was frozen. So on the snow, we didn't have footsteps. Some places, the foot would go through. Otherwise, we were walking and didn't have footsteps. If somebody would follow us. Uh-huh. Maybe someplace would find it. The food would go through. And we reached this house, and we stayed there. Asked them to stay for a day or so, for a couple of days to stay. And it was very cold. And this was Pesach already. We left matzahs hanging in a pillowcase, which we baked matzahs hanging from a beam under the ceiling. And we were hungry. My mother asked the farmer to buy some eggs. And it was from her eggs. And my mother took out some coal to bake the eggs. Because it was Pesach, we didn't want to use the farmer's pot. We were observant. Uh-huh. We are observant still. So the farmer offered us a pot to cook the eggs. My mother says, no. And she thought, we don't know how to cook eggs. So she explained to us that eggs are being cooked, not baked. Potatoes could be baked, but not eggs. My mother said, yes, she knows. But we are baking them. Because for kashrus, we didn't want to use her pot. My uncle made kiddush on a lump of sugar. Then it was very cold to sit in the cellar in the house, so she gave us a long coat made out of sheepskin. So we could all huddle ourselves and cover ourselves. We were five people by then. My aunt and uncle, my mother and I, and my little cousin,
my uncle's son. And we were there. My uncle urged us a few times we should go to town to see if we could come back. So my mother and my aunt, who is that to go? He's too weak to go. He's a man. He could be recognized. He had a beard.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother and my aunt, they are women, so they could be taken as farmer women. They could go, and I was too small to go. So they went. They tried to reach town, and they heard somebody on the road, people coming. So they hide behind bushes, and they were frightened, and they ran back. They made a second attempt, a different night to come back to town, and they wanted to step into the first house of the suburbs of the town. And they heard dogs barking. They got frightened and ran away. They thought maybe it's the police or something, and they ran away. So then they decided that they knew there's a farm where Jewish people come to work. Maybe they'll go there and talk to the Jewish people and find out what's happening in town, if we could come back. It's been a couple of days. We are hungry, we are cold, we are uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
They went to that farm, and they knew the Jewish people are working there, but they didn't know exactly which field or which area they are at work, where, because it's a big farm and you don't know where they are. So they sent a girl from that house, ask her, do me a favor and call the Jewish people. Maybe you know who is at work today, which people. And she said, whom she saw, mentioned Jewish names. So my mother picked one name, and his name was Mendel Rabinovich. Call me Mendel. He was known because he was selling a lot of farmer supplies. So all the farmers knew him. He was dealing mostly with farmer supplies, hardware. In the meantime, there was an old grandma rocking in a cradle a baby. And the grandmother was asked my mother and my aunt, who are you? So they gave a different name and said they're from a different town. She says, I don't know, I'm blind, I can't see you, but according to the voice, you sound like you would be the Sheikh Adjira's kinder, the Sheikh Adjira's children. Or the Sheikh, being my grandmother, we had a name, Sheikh Adjira. Because my grandfather was a Sheikh, which in Polish would be Zhezhnikova. Or in Russian would be Reznichiha, Reznik, my grandfather was. So this is how they titled my grandmother, Tanya Zhezhnikova, or Reznichiha, because
so
my...
So what happened?
So in the meantime, my mother and tried to deny who she was, but asked her, what's doing in Kravitz? What's doing in the town? Don't ask what a tragedy befell your town. They killed the rabbi and his wife and his children. And the Rebbetzin had a single sister, and they killed her. Then the Rebbetzin had a married sister from the one we bought the watch, the gold watch, earlier in the story. And her husband was in Siberia. They killed her and her four children, the two sons and the two daughters, because they didn't want to have a trace. And they were looking for the Sheikh's children, which means they were looking for us. They came to our house, they were looking for us. The Germans knew that in the Jewish community, the Rav and the Sheikh are the leaders of the community, and the people will follow what the Rav and the Sheikh will say. So since they killed the Rav of our town, they want to kill the Sheikh of our town, because we're the leaders, and they looked for us. By then, my mother didn't want to wait anymore for Mendel to tell us what's doing in the town, so they tried to leave, but then he arrived, came from wherever he was working, and he told us, don't come back to town, they're looking for you. So as earlier, my mother and my aunt had obstacles. They could not go into town. The dogs were barking, or they heard noises or voices. Each time they turned back, this was a muzzle, because you never know on whom they could step into, and they would catch them and being executed, because they were looking for us.
So where did you go?
So after
there?
That, we did not return to town. We asked the lady where we stayed if we could stay with her more, if we could stay with her a little bit longer. This mentor suggested that there are some towns which they didn't have executions yet. Maybe you can go to those towns and be there with the other Jewish people in the ghettos. He suggested some towns, some names. Our town wasn't executed yet. Only the rabbi's family was taken, which was actually the rabbi's family, the rabbi's sister and children, and her single sister, were three families taken. And they're looking for us, but not, it wasn't the mass execution yet. It was only like single families. So we asked our farmer if we could stay with them a little bit longer. We didn't tell them exactly what happened, because they might be frightened to keep us. Being it was hunger and land, because when the Germans arrived, and they were going through the fields. They spoiled the crops, and also they burned the crops. So people did not have any wheat or potatoes because they ruined the crops. They arrived in the summertime in 41, and they were going with their tanks through the fields, so they ruined the crops before the crops could be harvested. So by the end of the winter was hunger. The people had no food. Being we had money with us, we had gold rubles. We gave her money, a 5 ruble, 10 ruble, and we sent her to which we knew in the area who were rich farmers that maybe still have supply that she could buy from them. So being we helped her with food. She kept us. Maybe she didn't know the consequences, what was going to come to her if they would discover. Besides, she thought maybe nobody knew that we are there. So this was, we came to her about March 30th, but then it's already April, beginning of April, 42. Mm-hmm. And a few weeks later, like now it's going to be the Yotzet for my town, year 11th. I don't remember what date it was as far as the regular, the secular calendar, but I remember one afternoon we saw a big fire through the window from the farmer's house where we stayed. And each of us tried to guess the location where the fire was burning. Each one going through the air, looking, having the landmark, let's say the church, or a mill, or whatever we could see from far, because it was, we have 5 or 6 kilometers from town, but we saw the flames. So we could take guesses where it is. My guess was that this is the public school. The way my orientation went, I said, this is the public school. Other people in the family, including the farmer, looking at the fire, look, there's a fire. Everybody tried to get something else. We tried to send the farmer, the man from the house where we stayed, he should go and find out what it was. Just for execution.
It was the what?
The execution.
It was the execution.
It was the execution. So we tried to send the lady, she was more witty, to town to find out what happened. She went to town to find out. And when she came back, she came down to us to the cellar, where we were hiding under the foundation of the house. She hugged us and she kissed us. And she said, I'm not going to let you go. You stay with me. Whatever's going to happen to you, it's going to happen to me, or to me, or to you.
What was this lady's name?
The lady's name is Anna Kubinska.
Anna Kubinska.
Kubinska. She lives now in Krakow. She's in Krakow. She lives in Krakow. We have a correspondence. I send her Christmas gifts. We exchange pictures. She asked me many times to come to visit her. And every time I make attempts to come, my husband cannot make it for one reason or another, because I want very much to go to see her. She asked me, but I'm still alive. I'm getting older. I want to see you. And every year I made attempts to go on vacation. Every time somehow my husband does not get a vacation and he can go. And she told us about the tragedy what happened. She cried and we cried and we cried and she cried. And she said, told the stories. Later on she went again to town on a Sunday to church, and there were stories talking which people were taken. A baby, one mother, young mother, tried to put a baby in the crib and put some blankets and pillows under the baby. They heard the baby cry. They shot the baby. And she had to carry a dead baby, the blood running, to the execution spot. One mother carrying the baby from crying was biting the baby. Some people told that the screams, when the Jewish people were rounded up and going through the streets, through their screams, they couldn't listen to the screams in the houses. They put blankets on the windows. They put pillows over their heads. From the Gentiles, they couldn't take the screams of the people. The Jewish people were rounded out and taken. We had a big church, the Roman Catholic Church. And there was a big fence made out of brick or stone, very tall fence, about 10 foot tall. They put the people there between the church and the fence. And they had to give out their money or jewelry, whatever sewn in their clothing. They told them they're going to let them free. They did, but they didn't. I was right about the location, about the public school. It wasn't the public school, but the closest to the public school, there was a big warehouse that the Russians built when they occupied our town between 39 and 41. They built a big warehouse. And that's where they put in all the Jewish people in the warehouse. They went through a few times with a machine gun. They put gasoline and they burned them. Many were half alive, wounded, and many were alive. A little girl, I think her name is Chaisora. Her mother's name was Risha. So they used to call her Chaisora Risha. She was about 12, but small in height, short in height. Not a tall girl, a small girl. Her parents were short. She ran out. And then one man I forgot his name. He called a man from the local people. He was Leschinsky's brother-in-law. He's from the Unterweltnikes of the town. You know what it means, mm-hmm. Unterweltnikes. He grabbed this little girl and threw her into the fire. She ran out, frightened. And he chased her. She was little. Her steps were small. She was running. He chased her. He grabbed her. He carried her. Threw her in again a second time. And she ran out. But then, by the second time she ran out, her clothes were burning because he put through her down.